It is Wisconsin Weekend, coming to you from Superior. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking about craft beer in the Twin Ports. Beer consists of yeast, grain, hops, water, and water is a biggie. It makes up more than 90% of beer. Water from the depths of Lake Superior is naturally soft, which is a good thing, not to have to remove all the minerals. Are you a craft beer tourist or someone who enjoys tasting local beer when you visit a town? What breweries have you visited around Wisconsin? And what did you enjoy about them? We're at 800-642-1234. Frank Kashuba is Director of Brewing Operations at Earth Rider Brewery in Superior. Frank, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
So at Earth Rider, you promote the brewery's use of Lake Superior water to make beer. Why is that important? Is it better than other sources?
Well, Lake Superior water, as you mentioned, is very soft, has very low mineral content, which makes it a really nice blank palate for breweries to make beer. Beer styles originated in areas because of the water, actually, that was there. So pilsners in the Czech Republic worked really well because the water was really soft, whereas in Dublin, Ireland, you know, different country, but the water is really hard, so making a beer like a pilsner there wouldn't taste the same. It wouldn't taste very good. And that was, of course, you know, years before, centuries before, people really understood water chemistry. But having this soft water source means that we can make pretty much any beer style that we want pretty easily because we start with this soft water. And then if we want to add more minerals to it, we can. So it adjusts it pretty easily.
Yeah. Right. So you start with a more of a kind of a cleaner palate,
exactly.
Not having to remove any salts, any minerals. How do you measure water quality for making beer?
Well, part of it is just subjectively tasting it. You know, and you could taste compared. You if you've traveled around, your municipal water sources vary a lot in how good the water tastes. And water being the hugest ingredient by far in beer, if the water is going to taste good, you have a better chance of making really good beer.
What other local ingredients have you used in making beers?
Well, on and off through my career, I've used some local hops. Hops are starting to be grown more and more commonly in the in Wisconsin and Minnesota and Michigan. Traditionally, hops were grown in this region, you know, in the early 1900s before hop production was moved out to the Pacific Northwest, and that's now where most of it takes place. Also, there's been a push for more local grain to be grown. So some specific barley sources or barley varieties that can grow really well, say in Minnesota, a lot of the barley that's grown now is grown on the Great Plains. So the Dakotas, Montana, prairie provinces of Canada. But again, more research is being done by some of the local universities to find barley varieties that'll work well in this area. It's always a challenge because corn is king. And if you can grow corn, you're going to get a better price for it. So it's trying to get farmers to grow really high-quality barley for the best beer production.
Well, it's kind of neat because you have local beer, but then local ingredients, which really makes it special to an area like Superior.
Yeah, absolutely.
Some craft breweries change their beers all the time, and others always have, like, a standard offering. Mm-hmm. How often do you develop new beers, and what does that process look like?
Yeah, it's definitely a balance, and different breweries do it different ways. And what we've done at Earth Rider is we have a series of beers that we have around all the time, flagship beers, which include our Superior Pale Ale, Caribou Lake IPA, North Tower Stout, and Precious Material Helles. So those are always available and available in cans. We rotate some other beers, so like we have a fruited kettle sour. Those are becoming much more popular. So we have a raspberry version of that called Raspberry Crush. We had just come out with Blackberry Crush as well, so blackberry infused kettle sour. But then we have a lot of seasonals, and some of them are really seasonal, like depending on that time of year, it's people want to drink. So in the fall, it's Oktoberfest style beers because people love to drink those. But if you have those around in November, nobody wants to touch them. So you have to have the timing of some of these beers down really well. And so, you know, lighter, crisper beers for the summertime, usually some heavier barrel-aged beers, imperial stouts, things like that for the wintertime.
Is there anything anyone can do with cranberries? We've got an excess of cranberries in our state. I'm looking for some markets.
We do actually use, we have used cranberry in some of our beer. Actually, we made a cranberry version of that fruited kettle sour last fall that went over really well. And we partnered with a bar, one of our retail partners in Stone Lake, Wisconsin, which is a big cranberry growing region. They have a cranberry festival in the fall.
Oh.
And we made this beer called Cranberry Crush, and they poured it at that festival. So
I bet that was well received.
It was really well received. Yeah.
Yeah. We're talking with Frank Kashuba. He is director of brewing operations at Earth Rider Brewery in Superior. What do you think of the surge in craft breweries across Wisconsin? Are you excited about all the new offerings? Or perhaps you have questions, maybe a little bit overwhelmed. We're at 800-642-1234. Give a call. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Frank, you've been a craft brewer in this region for more than 15 years. What have you seen change over time?
Well, for one, there's a lot more craft breweries now, which is awesome. It's an incredible thing because it's this analogy of a rising tide lifts all boats. And if we have more and more good craft beer being made locally, that means more people are going to come here to visit. Craft beer tourism is a really big thing. And if you can go to a region that has several really good breweries, you're more likely to go there than to seek out one brewery, for instance.
Do you think there's more interest from local customers, that you get even locals coming in and seeking out local beer?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Superior has been extremely supportive of us. Earth Rider Brewery is the first production brewery to be in Superior since 1967 when Northern Brewing Company closed. And so when we started up the brewery, I was really, really pleased at the support that we're getting from the crowd from Superior, Wisconsin. So,
what about that increase of competition? Because you still have to maintain that bottom line. I mean, mm-hmm. when we were at your brewery yesterday, you have a ton of infrastructure there. That's
right.
A lot of investment.
That is true. Yeah, well, that just means competition means that you have to be producing a really high-quality product if you want to succeed. And as everybody else gets better, it means you need to get better too. So it pushes us to make the best beer that we can. Quality is king in craft beer.
The city of Superior received a state grant in 2017 to renovate this warehouse for the Earth Rider Brewery, very large warehouse. How mm-hmm. much of a role did that grant play in getting your brewery started?
Yeah, the city of Superior itself has been incredible for us to work with. They were very supportive of bringing a brewery into town. And they were a really good ally in working with the state on bringing some grant money in for us so that we could remodel the old Lehman Mercantile warehouse space and turn into a really functional brewery.
How large of a space is that?
It's about 10,000 square feet. So we've got some room to grow, which is great because I don't want to run out of room too early.
What is the role of government in helping local breweries succeed?
Well, I think as we just talked about, having some grant money available to help new businesses get off the ground is a good thing. Also, just, I don't know, being supportive and helpful in other ways.
Do you see camaraderie from your fellow local brewers? Do you guys get together?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I don't get together as much as I used to because I have a wife and son at home and I live outside of town, so I'm usually at work and then occasional an evening event and then going home, but still enjoy getting together with a lot of people that I've worked with over the years in the Duluth Superior area and running a lot of great breweries in town. So
we're talking craft beer and Lake Superior water on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. Frank Kashuba is our guide. He is director of brewing operations at Earth Rider Brewery in Superior. Are you an amateur brewer? Are you interested in learning more about brewing? What questions do you have about getting started? And what flavors would you like to see in a craft beer? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll get back to brewing, maybe hear from you in just a minute on the Ideas Network. We're talking craft beers and why Lake Superior is a great source for beer makers in this region. It is Wisconsin Weekend. We're coming to you from Superior. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Craft brewers in the Twin Ports have been bragging about the quality of Lake Superior water for decades. What do you think of the surge in craft breweries across Wisconsin? Are you excited about all the new offerings or maybe perhaps overwhelmed? Join in at 800-642-1234 to give a shout out to your favorite craft beer. Tweet us, WPR Mornings. Frank Kashuba is our guide. He is director of brewing operations at Earth Rider Brewery in Superior. And Frank, we got an email from Jonathan who says, shout out to South Shore Brewery in Ashland in Washburn, Wisconsin. Best water ever, great beer. And Jonathan really loves the Rhodes Scholar Stout.
Yeah.
That is a very smart beer.
South Shore Brewery does a great job with those beers, yeah.
I love the name. Mm-hmm. That's fabulous. Well, the morning show, as I said before, visited your brewery yesterday, and we saw bags of ingredients and machines. We saw shiny aluminum tanks and spigots. And Earth Rider's Steve Margren gave us a bit of an explanation. Let's listen.
We're just purging the tank of all the oxygen. So we want CO2 in there. Oxygen is bad for beer. Oxidizes it, kind of gives it that like kind of cardboardy taste. So we don't want any oxygen in here. So we're pumping CO2 into the bottom and then all the oxygen out the top.
Sounds like a chemistry experiment.
It is a little bit, yeah.
And it's so precise. Your brewing process is absolutely precise. I mean, you're literally punching in numbers to make sure you have the exact temperature right.
Right. Brewing is a real nice mixture of art and science. And it's really interesting for me because I have a science background, and so I draw on those strengths. But then it's a really great creative outlet for me as well. So It marries up pretty interestingly, yeah. But definitely you have to know what you're doing in terms of some of those precision things in order to make a really consistent quality beer.
How do you keep your yeast doing what you want it to do? Because can't yeast get a little renegade?
Yeah, they can. and actually, as I mentioned, we were chatting yesterday that really as brewers, we're really yeast farmers. We can't make the beer. We're making food for the yeast. And if we're keeping the yeast happy, then that's about the most important thing that we can do because it really all starts with the yeast. So it's just, feeding them what they want to eat and then taking good care of them. We'll actually reuse yeast from batch to batch and make sure that they're being stored properly, the right conditions, and that they're getting used when they're not being stored for too long.
And you have a really interesting process of moving your ingredients through the process. Can you explain?
Yeah. So on the grain side of things, our malted barley, we have a mill and a grist case. So basically the day before we brew, we crush up the grain to our specifications. It gets stored in a grist case, so basically a plastic silo. And then it gets moved by a conveyance method called a cable bay, which is a very gentle way of moving the grain around. And it moves it from one side of the brewery to the other over to our brewing equipment where in our mash tun it's mixed with hot water.
Why do you not want to jostle the grain after you've, broken it up just so?
Right. Well, that gets back to some of the consistent quality things that I just mentioned. When we have the grain cracked to the specifications that we want, we don't want it further degraded. We don't want it broken down more. So being able to move it gently from place to place is really important.
Let's go to Dan now, joining us from Drummond. Hi, Dan.
Hello. Now, one of the breweries, although I don't get to it myself, is in Ashland, and that's the South Shore Brewery. But a regular beer makes me sick as anything. But one of the specially crafted beers is from Liney Kugel, and it's called Berry Wise. And for me, that is something that I'm able to drink without getting sick on.
Dan, thanks so much for the call. Now there are two shouts out for South Shore Brewery.
Yeah, Bo does a great job there at Ashland, so yeah, I'm not surprised.
What is it about putting a berry or a fruit flavor in beer? How does it complement?
Well, part of it, it's the acidity of the fruit in with the beer, because fruit has natural acidity to it as well. But just, broadening the flavors, part of what's great about craft beer is that there's a lot of different choices in flavors. As opposed to the mass marketed beers, the big breweries are basically the flavors are very similar in between them, even though they have diehard fans one way or another. But with craft beer, there's a huge amount of different flavor choices. So people are likely to find something that they really like. Some people like more than others, but some people have very specific tastes. So,
and your North Tower Stout won a bronze medal at last year's World Beer Cup. Can you tell us about that beer?
Yeah, absolutely. We're extremely proud to have won at that big competition. Basically, they were giving out about 300 medals for over 8,000 beers entered in that competition. And so, yeah, our North Tower Stout is a shout-out to the North Tower area of Superior that we have our brewery in. And the beer itself has a lot of really nice dark chocolate notes, some coffee flavors as well. Even though there was no chocolate or coffee put in, that's all malt-related. And even some little dark fruit character in there, too, and finishes slightly sweet but very clean, and it's been really popular.
How do you go about finding a name for the beer?
You know, we kind of chat about it, and sometimes it just comes out of thin air, like, wow, we need to make a beer named this, and then in the future, you know, you keep that name and use it. And there's other times when you don't know what the name of it is until you taste the beer, and like, okay, we should call it this.
The brewery has an Aloise Amber Ale, a Royal Bohemian Pilsner, and a Cloud Top Hazy IPA. So, what about those beers? What pops out to you there in terms of their names as well?
Right. The Aloise Amber, well, that's a basically a neighborhood in Superior, also named for an explorer. I don't know all that much about Aloise or that's how it's pronounced here is Aloise, and though I know it's French. But so, you know, place names can be used and can work really well to create like associations with place. That's a lot of what craft brewery is about, association with a community. And other times, like with the Cloud Top Hazy IPA, hazy IPAs are described as being really soft and pillowy, kind of like a cloud. So the idea with a cloud top came to mind.
You are also a brewery consultant. Can you tell us a little bit about what that work involves?
Yeah. So part of what we do is as BevCraft, which is the consulting part of our company, as we help other breweries get off the ground. So basically getting started from concept to actually making beer. We also occasionally help breweries that are having problems with various issues.
In the brewing process?
Yeah, in the brewing process or in, well, more in the brewing process. Uh-huh. At least that would be my part of it, brewing process and recipes, just how their draft lines are set up, different things like that people run into problems with.
How important is it to get the right equipment and really good equipment?
To make consistent beer, having really good equipment is really important. You can make really good beer on really, really basic low-tech equipment, which is what I did for the majority of my career. But being able to make really consistent beer is more difficult until you get really nice equipment, I think.
Yeah, and when I walked into your brewery, I mean, it was all this shiny aluminum.
Shiny stainless.
Stainless steel. Yeah, that's a lot of steel.
It is, yeah.
Wow. So what challenges seem to be facing craft brewers in Superior or even around the state? What's out there? That's what's kind of difficult.
Yeah, as you alluded to before, you know, competition is a big thing. Competition for shelf space in a liquor store, competition for tap lines. And but again, it drives you to make the best beer that you can. And when people taste quality, that's something that people are drawn to. So,
what advice would you give to newbie brewers, people just getting started, perhaps even in their basement?
Yeah, getting started in your basement.
Or garage.
Well, yeah. boy, there's so many more resources available now online than when I started. Basically, I started homebrewing in 1991, and there were just a couple books available and not much else. And now there's so much information online that you can garner. So, you know, find sources online for getting information. Use the best ingredients that you can find. And just brew a lot, because you learn a lot by brewing and tasting your results.
Try and fail.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Try, fail, taste. Maybe not. Throw it out.
Yeah.
We'll try this again. Are there craft brewing clubs around? Is there some camaraderie?
There are craft brewing clubs. I used to belong to one in Duluth years ago when I was really into homebrewing, and called the Northern Ale Stars. But there's homebrewing clubs that are really active in the region and in many towns. So.
And is it best, perhaps, if you really want to get started as in a business and like yours, to mentor or have that chemistry background, or how would you get started in a business?
Yeah, definitely. Apprenticeships is one way that had been done in the past. That's not as common anymore. But basically getting a job in a brewery and learning from other brewers is a great way of doing it, because brewing on a commercial scale and brewing out of your garage or your basement are really two different things. And learning how the process works on a commercial level is a bit eye-opening when you start.
Well, Frank, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Frank Kashuba is Director of Brewing Operations at Earth Rider Brewery, and he joined us at WPR Studio here in Superior. We should also mention that Earth Rider Brewery is a business sponsor of Wisconsin Public Radio. And you can weigh in as part of our Wisconsin project. We want to know what your favorite Wisconsin beer labels are. The labels with the most submissions go to a voting round where you select your favorite. Learn more at WPR.org/Wisconsin. It is Wisconsin Weekend here on The Morning Show. Coming up, you won't run out of things to do here in northern Wisconsin. We're getting tips on what to see and do both on and off the beaten path. We're having a blast. News update is next. Stay with us from Superior here on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer-Kent in our Superior Bureau, and we're getting insider tips now on what to see and do up north. We're touring around the North Woods on Wisconsin Weekend. Bayfield in bloom is exactly 2 weeks away when 50,000 blooming daffodils say, come hither. Summer vacation season right around the corner. What is your favorite place up north? What are your favorite things to do? Do you and your family go to a cabin, perhaps? What do you love most about it, and why do you keep going back? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. David Eads is Executive Director of the Bayfield Chamber of Commerce and Visitor Bureau. David, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
So Bayfield in bloom is not too far away, getting a little busier for you there. Can you take us there? What can people experience?
Bayfield in bloom has been happening since 2003 or four, a little before I started with the Chamber Visitor Bureau. Larry Mueller, I believe, has been the kickoff since the beginning. He does a wonderful job. We have the live
Garden Talk
at our
Friday,
at our pavilion right on the water. You know, over the years, like you have mentioned, we've planted over 50,000 daffodils around town, and it's a wonderful way to kick off the whole kind of celebration of spring for us. So,
what are some of the events that you have planned during that? And it's a span of time. It starts on the 9th or 10th.
I believe the 10th.
The 10th and runs until June. Is that right?
It does, yes. So we have, there's a garden tours that we do around town. There's a city tours of gardens. There's country tours of gardens. We highlight the orchards, which are all starting to open up. There's stores, and Hauser's has their big plant sale. We also do now a native plant sale as a part of the Bayfield in Bloom with one of the local nonprofits in the area. So, and we end it at the blessing of the fleet to kick off the traditional fishing season for the year. So,
why daffodils? What's so lovely about them in Bayfield?
They're daffodils. They come up early. They're beautiful. I mean, they're early blooming, and they're wonderful. You get the crocuses, the purples, and the yellows of the daffodils, and if you've not been up there when they're blooming and there's just thousands of them, it's just beautiful.
Well, let's stick with the theme of beauty here. Island life and Wisconsin aren't two things most people think to put together, but this state actually has a lot of islands. Can you tell us where they are?
So we're at the tip of Bayfield County in Wisconsin, and we are blessed with 22 beautiful islands that make up the Apostle Islands. 21 of them are part of the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore. And Madeline Island is the only inhabited island, and a beautiful place to take the ferry across from Bayfield. You can spend the day there. You can spend a couple days there if you really wanted to. Great state park, great hiking trails. Our side, the same. It's just, we are blessed with being able to tour these islands, to go to these islands. It's the largest number of lighthouses and light stations of any national park, and miles and miles of wonderful beaches. So
where should people begin who've never been to Wisconsin's islands? Where do you start?
You should come to our visitor center in Bayfield. And, you know, there's many ways to see the islands. You know, the cruise service does just a beautiful job on their grand tour. They do a morning tour. They do an evening tour. They just added a new boat last year, which is just lovely. And they're also now doing tours out to the sea caves. There are any number of sailboat rides that you can take that are a little more customized. And you get to actually, you know, get behind the wheel and be the captain of that boat. And there's also some powerboat tours that are done. They're also a little more custom. You can go kayaking. It's how you want to. You can bring your own boat.
Quite watery. This is all
very
watery.
Yep.
So are there good overnight trips or perhaps longer backpacking trips?
There are. Absolutely. There's a couple of outfitters there that will do multiple night trips out to the islands, even themed ones. There's one that's a culinary trip, like a three-night culinary trip where you cook your food on the beach and it's all local foods and local dishes. It's wonderful.
Wow. And that sounds amazing.
It is.
So what are the best islands and beaches for swimming and for the kids?
I think Stockton Island has one of the best beaches. It actually was ranked a couple of years ago as like one of the top 10 beaches in the nation. So it has wonderful singing sands, which is really rare in the world. You can move your hands through the sands and they make the most wonderful sounds because of the crystal structure of the sand. It only happens a few places on Earth, and we have one of them on Stockton Island.
And the color of the sand?
White.
White sand beaches.
Yes.
So tell us about Baker Island. What can people do there? The dragon boat races, is that on Baker Island?
I believe that's in Superior.
And that's in Superior. Okay. So let's look at, so when you go into Bayfield and you want to perhaps check out some of the local farms mm-hmm. and, you know, orchards, how should you begin?
So we are surrounded by orchards and berry farms, again, because of the islands. You know, we're on Lake Superior, which keeps our environment a little more stable temperature-wise. But because of the islands also protect us from the winds that you would get. So we have this little microclimate in Bayfield. So we have 14 orchards and berry farms. We're the berry capital of the state, just for the number of variety and kinds of berries we grow. And, of course, apples, you know, culminating with our big Apple Fest in October. So we actually have a wonderful map that will walk you through all the different orchards and what they have. And it also tells you what's available at any given time during the year. And I mean, all of them have wonderful things to offer.
We're talking with David Eads. He's Executive Director of the Bayfield Chamber of Commerce and Visitor Bureau. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been to Bayfield, perhaps the Apostle Islands? What does that trip look like to you? Where do you love to go and visit? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Here we are at the end of April. What is the best part of this area, this time of the year? Because I know we've got perhaps a little bit of snow precipitation, maybe not. Weather can be touch and go.
I'm going to ignore that.
Okay. All right.
So we've had some rain recently, which is actually very cool because we have a number of waterfalls in the area. So in the spring, after the rain and the snow's melting, hiking to some of these waterfalls is just amazing because they're really going full blast. So, you know, there's Lost Creek Falls and by Cornucopia. There's a number of little ones by us all along the South Shore. We love the rain.
How close can you get to those falls?
The Lost Creek, you can literally walk behind it.
Wow.
So that's one of my favorite ones.
What about the hiking trails?
The hiking, we have miles and miles of hiking trails. So, you know, there's Red Cliff actually just won a stewardship award from the state for the first tribal national park just north of Red Cliff beautiful little hike through some awesome old growth hemlock down to Lake Superior, where you then have a view of, I think, five islands you can see if you look hard enough.
Sold, sold. So I know you mentioned earlier going out to the ice caves. We all have that during the winter, wondering whether we can see them, if they're frozen enough. So when you do go out to the ice caves, tell us about that experience.
It's just magical. You know, you walking out on Lake Superior, that in itself is an adventure for most people who don't live in a climate like we do, where walking on a frozen lake or even driving on a frozen lake is pretty normal. So just the hike out there on the trail, and you're walking along the sandstone cliffs and the ice formations, not just the shapes and but the colors, the different colors of the minerals they pick up as the water flows through, it's just magical.
What are the caves like in the summer?
They're equally as beautiful. I mean,
is it pretty cool?
It's very cool. I mean, you get to, like I said, I've kayaked through them. I've boated through them. I mean, getting in a kayak, you really get a nice intimate feel for the caves. You get to go into some that you can barely get through with your kayak, and it's just wonderful. And again, the color, different colors of the sandstone is just amazes me every time. And they're positioned in such a way that the sun sets on that side. So if you get there at night, it's just amazing.
Are those guided tours through the caves?
They are guided tours, yes.
Can you tell us about some of the fun things to do that don't make it in front of the tourism brochures or some off-the-beaten-path things? Anything that comes to mind off the beaten path? Perhaps some food that we should consider.
Well, not known to many is the wineries on Betzold Road. They serve food, and it is just amazing. You go there at night, beautiful setting overlooking their vineyard where they've now planted lots of grapes, and have some wonderful food. And that one's still a little hidden gem for us, and I'm going to shine a light on it now.
And so there are multiple wineries then.
There are multiple wineries. We also have a nice distillery that opened up, Copper Crow, doing vodka and different drinks in Red Cliff. We will have a nano brewery opening this year at the Howell Adventure Center, which also is new just south of town, plugging all of our beautiful silent sports and biking. And, I mean, again, hundreds of miles of trails that we have to enjoy the beautiful natural beauty that we are surrounded by.
We are touring around the northern part of northern Wisconsin on the shores of breathtaking Lake Superior. It's Wisconsin Weekend, and our tour guide is David Eads, making such a great sell. He heads up the Bayfield Chamber of Commerce and Visitor Bureau. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Why is northern Wisconsin special to you? We want to hear about your favorite spots, hiking trails, beaches, restaurants. Share with us, what are your memories of visiting the Northwoods or other places up north? I have memories of Two Harbors as a kid. Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get back to this in just a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're touring the Northwoods on Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're broadcasting this week from our studios in Superior. We were at Canal Park in Duluth a Thursday afternoon next to the aerial lift bridge, and tell you what, after a gentle rainfall, we saw a double rainbow over the lighthouse pier. Double rainbow! And our executive producer, Keely Boltina, had the inspiration to shoot some amazing time-lapse photography of the ice moving across the water. Rainbow and all, you can see it on our Twitter feed. It is absolutely breathtaking. What is special to you about this region? Have you gone to any hidden away gems around Lake Superior? How did you find it? Where do you like to shoot photography up north? Join in at 800-642-1234. Not far from where we're broadcasting is the one and only Bayfield, Wisconsin. David Eads is executive director of the Chamber of Commerce and Visitor Bureau there, and he stays with us to talk about the town and the famous for its blossoming flowers. So, David, you wanted to talk a little bit more about food. What should we know about food?
Yeah, so, I mean, we have just a number of restaurants that I think with our local region and our regional food producers and their love of the land, we already talked about our little microclimate, but we have so many farms in the area that produce such wonderful local foods, and our restaurants serve that food. And so we have a wonderful farm-to-table atmosphere there, but we also have what I like to say is a lake-to-table because we have Lake Superior, so we have whitefish. So you can go into any number of our restaurants at any time and get different whitefish meals. You can, from the simplest restaurant with a simple burger to whitefish tacos to whitefish livers, if you want to really be daring.
And it doesn't have to be Friday.
It doesn't have to be Friday. Of course, we all know Friday fish fries are the best.
Yes, so. And they're tradition in your area. I mean, there's like huge boiling water and flames. And this is
Grunkies, it does a wonderful fish boil during the summer. So
it's amazing. Katrina from Grand Chute called in to say there is a place called Copper Falls in northern Wisconsin. You have to climb down a long stairway to get to the most beautiful sight at the waterfalls. And her family has traveled there many times, and she saw a wedding once, and it was just like the most beautiful spot.
I agree. It's south of Ashland in Mellon, Wisconsin, Copper Falls State Park. It's the couple rivers come together right there, and they have just the most beautiful hiking trails that circle around the whole shores of the river, going over a couple rivers, and you get just amazing views of the waterfalls there.
How about music? What's the music scene like?
So actually this weekend, the Washburn is going to kind of kick off our music season with the Broke Down Blues Festival. I believe it's their second year. Very popular, becoming very popular and wonderful. We have Big Top Chautauqua. If people are not familiar with Big Top Chautauqua, they need to be. Wonderful venue just south of town at the Ashwaubay Ski Hill. This year they're going to have a new structure over their tent. And I've seen their lineup again this year. And come to Bayfield, watch a show, listen to some music. We do live music every Tuesday in the park in Bayfield. Cornucopia does live music once a week on their beach or shoreline, I believe. So
we've been talking a lot about being outdoors in your neck of the woods, but what if that's not your thing? What about some indoor options?
You know, Bayfield County has more museums per capita than any other county in the state.
You so smile at that statistic.
I do, because I love it. And they're, you know, they're just wonderful museums. I mean, you... And I love history. I love learning about an area. You know, I go to the Green Shed in Cornucopia, or you go to the State Historical Museum on Madeline Island and learn about, you know, the history of the people that are still here and were here before us. And I mean, there's so much to do.
Well, David, there is so much to do, and thank you so much for taking us on a tour.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
David Eads is the executive director of the Bayfield Chamber of Commerce and Visitor Bureau, and we should mention that the Bayfield Chamber is a business sponsor of Wisconsin Public Radio. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's Brad Kohlberg with a piece about a photographer who just released a photo book documenting Wisconsin's independent music scenes.
Spencer Wells grew up in Eau Claire, went to college in Madison, and fell in love with Wisconsin music while photographing live shows. The visual artist combined some of those photos with essays about the state's independent musicians in a new book called Forward. Here he is reading from the book and talking about some of the featured artists.
There's an inclusive community that's grown across genres because there wasn't anywhere else to grow. This cross-pollination was happening in metropolitan Milwaukee, liberal Madison, and musician-friendly Eau Claire, but it was much further reaching than even these outposts. There was a weird art festival in Janesville for 5 years in a row. There were psych pop bands from Appleton. My favorite songwriter lived in Sheboygan, a short walk from the shores of Lake Michigan. What happens All I could do to keep up was just snap away with whatever camera I had on me. Yeah, so Thomas actually did create some music with the band Volcano Choir, which I thought was sort of really emblematic of Wisconsin music during this time, and I look back at those records as some of my favorite. So he was sort of a pioneer of the electronic music, not only in Wisconsin, but I would say nationally. We also have Rory Ferreira, who performs as Milo.
It's the lazy theologian, the clumsiest poet, stumbling through the poplar grove, and he doesn't even notice those tones.
Very interesting lyricist and hip-hop artist who has really pushed the boundaries of that genre.
At home on a cracked iPhone, alone and hairy, casting postmodernist abracadabra. It starts like this. Dum, 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 dum. I don't know.
There's Adeline Stry, who's from Eau Claire. She's a jazz musician who then started making more indie rock, but still sort of keeps those elements and that education in the background of her music. Wilden Hughes, who plays as W's and resides in Janesville. Interesting guy, farmer, but also, you know, in his basement was creating these really intricate songs. J.E. Sundy, another Eau Claire musician who just has a gorgeous, gorgeous playing style.
And all of my striving is at an end.
To just say that he's another guy with a guitar is to do a major injustice to his music. There's something really special about Wisconsin music that I always return to.
Everyone knows it's easy to be in love.
I think it's just something that runs deep in the water, or the woods, or something like that.
Spencer Wells is a photographer from Eau Claire. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Brad Kohlberg.
And Wisconsin Life is part of our weekly edition of Wisconsin Weekend here on The Morning Show. What's happening in your part of the state that could reach all corners of Wisconsin? Send your ideas for Wisconsin Weekend to mornings@wpr.org. That's mornings@wpr.org. And we'll explore your tip for a Wisconsin Weekend program. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.